Tonight's show is brought to you by the Mysteries of the Heavens, Bendetti Optics, and you, our listeners. If you're listening to this, if you have the volume up loud enough, you can probably smell me. Is up, all of you wayward souls, and welcome back to the Wayward Stories podcast. Wayward Stories is the podcast where we tell the tales of our adventures and our wanderings and our wonderings. And y'all, today I think that we have a little bit of both wandering and wondering. As I sit down to record this tonight, the 2024 total solar eclipse is just a couple of hours in my rear view, as is just, 100 miles or so, and a whole lot of dust that I've eaten today. And if you look closely at my face, I am very much sunburned. I had a big adventure today, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And I can't wait. The quick housekeeping tonight is simply this. Please like, please share, please subscribe, please rate and review. Let's move on. Let's talk about this a little bit. That's what we're here to talk about, the eclipse tonight. Today is the day. It has just happened and I'm still high. To be completely honest, I'm still high. It had that kind of an experience or that kind of an effect on me, which we will talk about more later. But what I want to do tonight is I want to take the opportunity while the iron is hot, while this is fresh in my psyche and my soul, to share the experience I had with you today. This is my first full total solar eclipse. I have seen partials like many of you, and I can now tell you firsthand that if you've not experienced a total in totality, in the path of totality, it's not the same. It's not the same. This will change you. So I just want to talk about the whole eclipse experience tonight, and we're going to start from the beginning, how this is kind of like, that's going to be tonight's episode. So we're going to start from the beginning. This has been a huge, huge buildup, a huge lead up. Some 2 years ago, you may remember me mentioning this right here on this podcast. We were already talking about this here in the state of Arkansas. I'll never forget the search and rescue meeting. Where they brought this up, and we were like, this is like 2 years away. And it's like, no, it's this big a deal. We're expecting to double the population of our state, And now is the time to prepare. So there has been an enormous buildup of momentum. And then you get tourism involved, right? And tourism's our industry now in Arkansas. Outside of meth and chickens, it's tourism now, baby. And so the tourism industry has been hyping this to the umpteenth, right? Big deal coming. I mean, so much so, like, for the last week, well, starting on, I believe, Thursday night, our search and rescue team, for example, we've kind of been on a standby status, and we put together, for the first time since I've been on the team in 8 years, we put together dedicated teams to AM, PM shifts to be available for whenever they were available. This is something you committed to up front. Again, our search and rescue is volunteer, but it's like, who can, you know, volunteer for these shifts? My shift started last night at 7 o'clock. Essentially, I considered myself on as soon as I dropped my daughter off at 5 o'clock yesterday, Sunday, the 7th. And I was on till 7 a.m. this morning. Thankfully, nothing eventful happened overnight, but we've had people on shifts. There's like this whole like back to this that not a lot of people know about. I mean, most of our air evacs, they've had extra, as they like to say, birds on standby, because, you know, a lot of them are more of a kind of a corporation. You know, they've got bases all over, like maybe the South or the Southwest or whatever. So they brought in extra birds, as it were, to the area to be prepared, because with gridlock traffic, if anyone gets hurt, nobody's getting driven anywhere in an ambulance. They're flying. Right? Huge, huge preparation for this. So there's a lot of buildup. There's a lot of excitement built up. Again, with tourism putting in their 2 cents, everyone has been totally jacked over this. So there's been a ton of lead up to it. And as it got closer, I have to admit, I started to feel that anticipation. Y'all, back in 2017, I told myself, and this was before any of the bad stuff, right, in my life. This was way back. But I told myself, when this next one comes around, I'm going to do something as epic as I can do, given whatever circumstances I am in. On the day that it comes around, I'm going to do the best I can. And I did just that. And so some 2 months ago, I asked off work for today. I had no intention, no matter whether I was on call with search and rescue, I had no intention of being at work on this day. For us, say, you know, someone living locally where it's going to pass right overhead, once in a lifetime event. And it's going to be a long time before we see the next one, which I'm already starting to plan for. Because as they say, once this gets in your blood, once you experience it, you will chase it. And I want to chase it. And unfortunately, I'm a po' boy and I can't chase him. I mean, this had such a profound effect on me. I mean, I'm sitting here right now, sunburned. My head is throbbing. My flesh on my head is throbbing from the sunburn. I am filthy. I have not had a shower. Like, if you're listening to this, if you have the volume up loud enough, you can probably smell me, to be quite honest. But I was like, I have to record this tonight. I don't really want to. To be honest, I thought about, should I let this process for a few days? And then I was already starting to feel depressed. Suddenly, the rest of the world after that event felt bland and boring. As I came down that mountain, it was almost like coming back into a different existence. And it was a boring existence. And it made me really sad inside. And I was like, we've really got to record tonight while some of the highs here. Because once I go back to work tomorrow, once real life comes back, yeah, it would give me more time to process all of this, but at the same time, it might take the edge off of how special this was. So I sat here before you in dire need of a shower and some aloe vera. But it had that much of an effect on me. I want to talk about it now. So with all of that backstory in mind, all of this stuff that's been leading up to it, I got my day off, got it secured, was on shift last night from 7 to 7, whatever. But even up until yesterday, last night, last evening, I did not know where I was going or what I was going to do today. Because ahead of time, right, there's a whole lot of what unknowns. We're planning on like enormous amounts of gridlock traffic. And so I'm going into redneck mode. The redneck's coming out of me. And I'm like, I know these back roads. I know these dirt roads. In southeast Oklahoma and southwest Arkansas. I mean, one was my FedEx route for like 3 years and the other is where I grew up. Okay, I know these roads. I need to pick a place. I've got to find the right vista because I knew. Here's the thing. I love photography. Any of you who listen to the show know I am an amateur photographer and nothing more, but I love it. I love it. But I knew the restrictions of my technical skills and abilities with photography, and moreover, my financial restrictions and gear restrictions. Like the equipment I had was not capable of shooting like a time lapse of the actual sun, or even really trying to shoot for the diamond ring, right? That mythical diamond ring. I knew I couldn't do that, but what I knew I could possibly do, I could possibly get a time lapse of the valley. And I thought that could be a very cool thing to watch this valley go through a time lapse. Hopefully, maybe there'll be some clouds to really show that progression. Time is moving, things are rolling, and all of a sudden it goes dark. And then the light comes back right in the middle of the day. So that's kind of what I plan to do. And at the worst case of the scenario would be I still experienced the eclipse somewhere in totality. It was going to be special. This was going to be a set it and forget it deal. Pre-planning is everything, guys. Pre-planning is everything. As I sit here and talk to you about, I didn't know what the hell I was doing as of last night. Up until last night, I had no idea where I was going and what I was doing. I promise you, there were a great many hours of research put into, can I even shoot a time lapse properly? You get into this whole sketchy area where you've got a camera set and it's taking photos every 3 to 6 seconds, depending on what you choose to try to pull this together, based on restrictions on your memory card space, the battery life of your camera, because you're needing like a 2-hour shooting session to get like 30 seconds of actual footage of a time lapse, right? This is what you're looking at. It ended up being like math. And you guys know me, I don't math very well. I ended up with like essentially what looked like calculus, some kind of an algorithm on a piece of paper that was like this long, that like was telling me how many seconds between shots, how I needed to expose the shots. It turned into this whole ordeal that nearly imploded my brain. And I finally realized, I was like, I have to dumb this down because I'm not going to ruin this experience that may be kind of a once in a lifetime deal over technicalities of trying to capture something that I do not have the ability to capture on the level of a million other people on this planet. They're going to be the ones that get 10 billion likes. They're going to be the ones that go viral. It's not going to be Justin. It's not going to be me. If I capture anything, it's capturing it for me. It's capturing it for my experience. So I decided up front, I want a set it and forget it situation. So even that took hours of research to fully understand what my camera does. I have a newer camera. I've had it for a couple of years, but because of school and other things, I've not really got to use it the way I did my older camera. That camera was kind of my bread and butter, that DSLR. And that was also the camera, and that's what I was doing. Okay, before I started school, that was what I put a lot of my time and effort into. I knew that camera like the back of my hand, what it could do, its capabilities. I understood it. These last 2 years, I upgraded to this mirrorless camera because I thought I've maxed out my capabilities with this DSLR, which was a true statement. Time has borne that out. However, I suddenly, after I got this new camera, it was about the time I started school, and I haven't had time to learn this camera properly. I've used it some, but I've not been real happy with it. And it's because I haven't had a chance to get to know it and learn how to use it and learn its capabilities. And so a whole lot of this was just almost me priming on what the hell kind of camera do I even own now and how does it work? That alone took some hours. And then you get me starting to overcomplicate things by putting together the algebraic equations necessary to hopefully just shoot a stupid time lapse of a valley. And then I didn't even know what valley, where, and if I was going to be able to find an overlook to even take the picture. But I spent a lot of hours getting it set to where I knew what I needed to do with the camera to give myself the best shot. And that left me setting last night with no real clue of where I was going to go yet. And over the last 2 days, I had this cockamamie idea. Down in southeast Oklahoma, there's a place. There's an abandoned fire watch tower up above the Three Sticks Monument. It's been about 10 years since I've been there. Last time I went there, I went in my old Z71, and by the time I came off that mountain, I had 2 flat tires. That road is not for the faint of heart. It is, I mean, right on the edge of being a rock-crawling road, okay? And knowing how ubiquitous UTV side-by-sides have become in the last decade, for sure, and I've seen firsthand what they do to roads and trails. They utterly destroy them. Then they turn into these washout creeks. I was like, okay, this is a gamble. If you shoot for this old firewatch tower, it may be the shot of a lifetime because you can still go up the steps. It is not gated off. It's on National Forest property. Even the old garage that was attached to the house that the firewatch personnel would have lived in on site. The old garage is still there, this old rock kind of shed. If it pays off, it's going to pay off huge. Like, this could be the shot of a lifetime. If we get there, here's the thing. We don't know that we can get there. And two, we don't know that we don't show up, and there's not always already a huge, I grew up in that area. I know how people roll. There's nothing guaranteeing that I wasn't going to show up to 400 UTVs all over that old house pad and a huge bonfire and a bunch of drunk people having a huge party. Not the experience I really wanted to have. I was like, this is literally an all or nothing. And not only was it an hour and 10 minute drive to where the dirt road starts, it would have been an hour and 10 or so minute drive to go just 9 miles. That's how rough that road is. It's a 2 hour and like 10 to 20 minute investment on what could be a total flop with no real contingency plan B. There was no real way to have a plan B. It's like it either works and you get a shot, or it doesn't work and hey, you're still sitting on the side of a mountain experiencing totality, but you're not getting the shot. It's all or nothing. And after giving that some thought and then looking at the actual track of totality, I realized I would have been just on the outer fringes. So it would have been totality, but it would have been like 3 minutes of totality. I was like, I'm so much closer to being right in the heart of totality at 4 minutes, 8 seconds, 10 seconds, 11 seconds, the max, kind of the high end of the spectrum we're going to get during this whole ordeal, this whole event. We got to find something else. So I like crapped out on that last night. I was like, that's not going to work. That's too risky. It's the risk reward does not, it does, it's skewed the wrong way. It's skewed way more towards risk. What else can we do? So I sat down with Google Maps and I went to satellite view and I was skimming around my old stomping grounds, my FedEx runs, because down there, well, Mount Magazine's down there for one thing. Knew I didn't want to be there. You know, state park, big name, it's going to be packed. Okay, did not want to be on Mount Magazine. So I'm looking the fringes. I want somewhere I can go back roads because I'm planning for crazy traffic on the highways, which when I took off this morning, didn't pan out. But going back, that was happening. But I was thinking ahead. I'm trying to cover all my bases. I couldn't spend a whole weekend somewhere camped out and have my place staked, right? I had my daughter this weekend. She had to go to school today, unfortunately for her. So it's like, I'm leaving either last night or this morning. So I decided I'm going to leave before the rooster crows, really early this morning. And it worked out pretty close to that. And I'm going to get somewhere, right? I'm going to get somewhere. So last night I'm like, but where is that somewhere? As I scanned my old stomping grounds, this was really kind of a godsend. It's almost one of those things. It's like how this just worked out. For all I know about the back roads of this state, for all the places I've explored and all the things I've done, where I ended up today, I've never heard of in my life. And I even ran a FedEx route for 3 years all around that area, real close to where I ended up today. And I mean, we're talking back in the sticks, you know, houses are 10 miles between them in some places. But I'd never heard of this. And so as I'm scanning all over Google Maps and I'm looking everywhere. I'm looking at topo maps. I'm looking for high points. This is how desperate I am. I'm like, I have to find somewhere, even if I'm bushwhacking through the forest to find a sheer bluff face to get this entire valley. This is what has to happen. And so I'm scanning around. Suddenly on Google Maps, this thing pops up. It says Lake Vista or Lake View Vista. I don't remember now. And I was like, what's this? And I see someone's been there and they've taken pictures and oh my God, the view. Oh my God, the view. And I was like, this is it. This is my place. How do I get there? And I'm already planning for it. And then suddenly I realize Google Maps takes me to a spot at the bottom of the mountain, like 6 miles away. And it's like, and then you walk from there. I'm like, that's not going to happen. There's no way. I wouldn't have time, right? And there's a bushwhack. There's no trail. So I get to looking. I pull it back to satellite view and I realize that Google Maps, you know, loses its crap when it gets to a certain point. But it appeared that there are roads that could get me to where I wanted to go. I mean, this was a like, it actually has a national forest sign, Lake View Vista or whatever, Lake Vista. And so I went and I read every single review in the, in Google reviews for it, looking for a clue. And I found one. Found one man who said, Google Maps doesn't show it, but you can make it all the way from Sugar Grove, though the road is rough. You can make it all the way through from Sugar Grove. And I was like, ooh, I've got a place indicator. I know that I can go from Sugar Grove to there. Give me satellite. So I'm looking at satellite and I see this line and it disappears in places under tree canopy, but I can follow this line. And I'm like, I think this is it. And I figured out as far as Google could take me. And then I took a picture of my laptop screen on my phone and sent it to my iPad to take my iPad with me so that once I lost the maps, I could literally just look at the picture on my iPad screen to figure out more or less if I'm in the right direction. And then it dawned on me, my old FedEx days coming through for me. I went and found, I've got county maps for every damn county in this part of the state. It's one of the first things they teach you when you start a new route. Go to the county courthouse on your route first day and get the county map. Everyone has one. And it's got all these old roads. The forestry roads, some of them don't even go anywhere anymore. Some of them are on private property, but it's every road that's almost ever existed. So I'm using this old map and I'm realizing, here it is. Here it is. I see it. I see it. I think I can do it. But then again, it's like if this way fails, the only way to this Lakeview Vista is like an hour and a half, literally an hour and a half all the way around. If I put into Google Maps and finagled my way to go the long way, which was a little bit more sure bet, it was a 2.5 hour drive. The way I went, it was an hour and 7 minutes. And then like the 20 minutes up the hill, regardless, it was, today was a gamble. Okay. I was hedging my bets. I was doing all the pre-planning I could and hedging every bet I could to give myself a shot. And at the end of it, I was like, at the end of all this, I may be sorely disappointed that I didn't get my chance to get some kind of special time lapse or whatever that I can't even be sure that I'm going to be able to pull off. But if nothing else, I'm going to be sitting in the forest away from people amongst nature when one of these very, very special events that happens in our natural world actually occurs. So that's what I set out to do. Lakeview Vista was decided upon. I did a bunch of writing, a bunch of screen capping, a lot of things, downloading offline maps and pulling together all the resources I had to try to give this the best shot possible. I loaded up an ice chest last night. I had lunch set up for today because I took books. I was like, I'm getting there so early. I'm giving myself the best chance unless somebody camped there to beat people there. And let me tell you something. It absolutely worked out. It absolutely worked out. I got out the door this morning, pretty much with sunup. And I'm cruising down and the roads aren't that bad. I was like, well, this is kind of promising. Traffic's not that bad heading out. Now, I did see lots of out-of-state plates, but it was still this kind of rush hour traffic here in the big, you know, here in the fort. And it's, you know, early rush hour, but it was rush hour traffic, people starting to come to work. And I was like, well, this feels probably pretty normal. But then I started seeing lots and lots of out-of-state plates, Georgia, Tennessee, all over. But it wasn't as bad as I thought. So we got to cruise highway most of the way down, even though I'd already pre-planned back road routes. Took highway almost all the way down, and then I hit the mountain. And when I got to the mountain, I was like, okay, this is it. This is either going to work or it's not. And if it's not, plan B is we've got a long trip around to the other side, and that's like our last hope. So I started up the mountain, and it went fairly smoothly. The road from Sugar Grove, as mentioned, is rough and washed out in places, but manageable. Subi's got close to 9 inches of ground clearance. Clemmy does. But, you know, it's doable. It's doable. Probably for a lot of cars, passenger cars, it could even be doable if you take your time, take it easy. Now, of course, I grew up driving any manner of someone's parents' vehicle you could find out to where we would party or camp or whatever. So there is a skill, there is an art to that. But if you go carefully, you could probably get a passenger vehicle, a basic passenger vehicle, up that side to this Lakeview Vista. So I'm still, at this point, flying completely blind, right? I don't even know if I'm going to make it. I don't know how good the vista is going to be, what it's going to take to fully get there, how it's going to really play out. So I'm cruising along. I head up the mountain and I'm passing cabins. Like there's people. Y'all, we have a lot of preppers in this world still here in the American South, especially back in them hills. Passing some pretty neat little cabins up in the middle of nowhere. And at least one guy was already standing outside drinking his coffee and giving me kind of the wonky eye at old Clemmy. And I was like, yep, I know what they're thinking. I was like, I might like as get shot today as anything else. That might be the greatest threat. But he was kind of giving me the wonky eye. I gave him a big wave and just kept on trucking up the mountain. Being respectful, mind you, to drive slowly by any cabins. Like if you ever go back roading, guys, dirt roading, be respectful when you pass people's houses, especially if y'all, some of them being the four-wheel drives, don't just go flying down these dirt roads. When you see a house, shut it down. Don't dust them out. Be respectful of the people that live there. You know, always try to do that. But I head up the mountain and make it through this series of pretty interesting, crazy switchbacks, get to the top, and then it's smooth sailing right across the spine of the mountain, man. And I get down and all of a sudden there's just a sign, like it's hidden up in the brush a little bit. But it's like Lakeview Vista. National Forest. Whip in there, and all of a sudden, I pull into like a little bitty parking pad behind an old, probably CCC-built rock wall. Quite honestly, I bet you anything, it's a CCC construction, WPA. And I'm staring off of this, this chasm across at Mount Magazine to my north, Blue Mountain Lake between Mount Magazine and myself. Sunrise is over, but the sun's still in morning mode. There's some low clouds far off to the east in the valley over the Pettigean River. This panned out. And guess what? Nobody else was there. I was like, I couldn't have asked for better than this. I could not have asked for better than this. It worked out like a freaking charm. It's like everything, all the planning, all the hedged bets for at least the location came together at one time. And I was like, cash, money, right? This could not have worked out better. All the bet hedging, the hedging of the bets, it all paid off on the location. Now an even more nerve-wracking thing begins, which is starting to find the composition I want for the shot and trying to plan out how many seconds per exposure, how much length of exposure can I get, how long can I run this thing. If people come, how can I keep them out of my field of view, my field of shot? How can I get the camera ready to go without eating too much battery? 2 hours of continuous running will drain a battery fast. You know, this is going to be a whole thing. And so then I really kind of started fretting, but I slowed down. I was there by myself and it was beautiful. Unfortunately, it wasn't bald eagles, but there were vultures literally soaring on the thermals just off of the bluff face. I was watching them move around in the breeze. I sat down and made myself a sandwich because I didn't have breakfast. Made a sandwich, got out my bag of chips, and I ate like a brunch, I guess you would say, sitting on the side of that mountain in complete silence, listening to the birds, listening to the crickets, just listening to nature. And the occasional little prop job airplane buzzing down through the valley. There was a handful of those up today. And it was beautiful. And it was relaxing. And it was peaceful. God, it was peaceful. And so I made myself calm down. Because I was getting jacked. For real, I was getting jacked. The anticipation. The buildup. I was jacked. I made myself slow down. Had my sandwich. And kind of slowly started. I started with just cleaning, something procedural, cleaned my camera, got my lens filters, got my lens off, got all the little soft cloths, you know, the cleaning cloths, and I've got like a little special tool, a pen to really clean it, cleaned it up really good, and started to mess with the settings, started to play with the math a little bit, fudge it this way, fudge it that way, doing it in camera, letting the camera do the algorithm, let the camera do the damn calculus, right? And tell me how long it's going to play for, how long it's going to, you know, how many shutters or how many captures for every few seconds, et cetera, et cetera. Let the camera figure it out. And I messed with that for a while. I got everything set up. I found a composition that took me a little while because you want a foreground, right? I've got Mount Magazine, the tallest point in Arkansas, to the north in the distance, taking up literally, it's like dominating my frame, except for in the valley below me, which is Blue Mountain Lake, which also shares dominance of the frame. But you need foreground. If you want that to look distant, you can't just have airspace in front of you. I needed that rock that I was setting up on, that bluff top. I needed that in the foreground to force that perspective out. That's part of photography, right? But how much? How much do I put in the foreground? That was a real question. I kept moving it around. I spent 20 minutes moving the camera around until something felt right to my vision, right? I was messing with the rule of thirds. I was trying to make sure everything was in the thirds and the frame. And I just messed with it until it felt right. In the end, all the rules I know of photography, they didn't exactly fail me, but following them didn't feel right. I wasn't getting the result that felt right, if that makes sense. So finally, I just started moving around. And that's something for any of you photographers out there, especially like me, amateurs, budding photographers, if something doesn't feel right, move your body, move the camera, move your perspective, move around. But I knew I needed foreground perspective. I finally found what I was happy with, interesting, you know, that it was just the way it was. It was just literally a move a couple of feet to the right so that the bluff that had kind of this little bend, a quick drop back towards me in it, exposed more of the valley, at least on the right side of the frame. And somehow that added the perspective. Everything I wanted to see in the frame came together. And I was like, this is the shot. If we're going to get this shot. And now we've got the composition set up. The subject is set up. This is still in question. Now it's a matter of starting this thing at the right time, letting this baby run, hoping the battery holds out, hoping the SD card can hold 1,000 shots, because that's what, or I think I had it at 1,096 frames to take to get as much, length of exposure as I can. Because an eclipse lasts 3 hours, right? If you want to see it when it's broad daylight all the way to complete darkness, there's like around an hour and a half window there. From the time the moon first nicks the disk of the sun to where it's totality. And then it's another hour and a half on the other side, roughly. It's around a 3 hour event. Totality happens in like an hour window from where it starts to become noticeable to complete dark and then back out. But I couldn't go a full 3 hours, but I needed as much time as I could. So I got all of it set up, and now it's the point of start it at the right time and hope everything works. All the hedged bets are now on the table. Everything is in place and ready. And I'm still, at this point, alone. And it's nice. And this is a great point to take us to break, because we're right at 30 minutes. We'll be right back. What is up, all of you wayward souls? I want to tell you guys about our newest sponsor, Bendetti Optics. A brand based right here in the good old US of A, Portland, Oregon, to be exact. And I bought my first pair of Bendetti sunglasses about a year and a half ago and fell in love with them so much so that I got online and ordered a couple of more pair. And when I did, there was a small shipping snafu, an order fulfillment snafu, and I got on the phone, gave them a call, and guess what? I get a call back from who? One of the big men themselves right there in Portland. From the top of the chain, have a great conversation, and we end up starting this great relationship we have. They more than made right the little snafu that occurred, and I am now a huge proponent of them because I can tell you from personal experience, they are good people, and they are trying to compete with the big boys out there coming in at a price point of about $40, but using the exact same frame material, TR90, and the same polarization process as the big guys. As it turns out, something I think we are already probably knew in our hearts, when you buy big name sunglasses, you're buying a big name, not necessarily any more quality than you can get somewhere else, like at Bendetti Optics. They have 29 different styles. They have multiple polarization options for whatever climate you happen to live in. And they back it up with like this lifetime guarantee that if your dog eats your sunglasses, it doesn't matter how you break them, send it back in with a check to cover shipping and handling and you're golden. You got a new pair on the way. These guys are truly trying to do it right, and they have this philosophy that a really good pair of sunglasses should not cost you so much that you are afraid to wear them. And I think all of us outdoorsmen can relate to that. So if you guys, like me, are very practical and like to get more bang for your buck and wear some great looking sunglasses, check out BendettiOptics.com. That's BendettiOptics optics.com. Or you can go over to Instagram/BendettiOptics. And that I highly suggest, whether you buy a pair or not, just to check out the cutest pupper you will ever see modeling sunglasses. Once again, that's BendettiOptics.com. And make sure and let them know Wayward Stories sent you. And welcome back. Thank you guys for sticking around through our sponsor break. Let's get right back to it. We dropped off at all the bets are hedged. I've had my brunch now, and I'm sitting there sipping a water, enjoying the quiet, and I hear the first gravel crackling. I was like, they're starting to show up. Boy, I really did play this right. Getting here early. So they start to show up. Well, the first people that show up aren't even locals. They're from Omaha, Nebraska. And they came down. We started a conversation, and they've become two of my favorite people in the whole world now. Had a great time with them, but they were the first ones there with me. Then we hear more gravel. And we get another group of three that show up. They are from St. Paul, Minnesota, and Washington, D.C. They all together, but they're from St. Paul and from Washington, from D.C. They, too, turned out to be some of my new favorite people ever. This was great. Like, we've got this lock or this, yeah, this lock on this rock. We've got this rock locked down, which is my goal. Get there early, stake my claim, make my space. You know, I accidentally did that in Big Sur, Pfeiffer Beach, the Keyhole Arch. You've heard that story a couple of times now. Today I did it intentionally. You got to go. You got to set your place. If ain't nobody camping there, we're getting our spot. Well, these guys came and they were just like, it was perfect because we ended up owning the front end of that rock. And super bonus, they all just happened to be super awesome because it could have been really bad. I could have been stuck there for 3 hours with a jack wagon. You know, it's possible. It happens in this state sometimes. I'm sure it happens everywhere, but there definitely is a clash of cultures when you get further out into the sticks, and we're pretty good ways out there. These fine folks, it turns out they had all come down and they had stayed down on, I believe it was in the campgrounds at Blue Mountain Lake. And this is what's like, this is super cool. Again, it's almost like one of those things. What a coincidence, but it's like none of the three of us in our little group that had kind of come together here, none of us knew where we were going to experience the eclipse as of like yesterday at some point. It was like, didn't know this was here. Of course, they're from out of state, so of course they didn't know it's here. They stayed down the mountain. They found it essentially the same way I did. I'm the local, quoting to quote, local, you know, from the area. None of us knew that that's where we were going to end up. And we ended up being the first three. Well, it was what? 3, 4, 5, 6. The first six of us, the first three groups on the spot. Two, and me as an empath, I can, you know, I pick up a lot of body language and I can tell these things. When the locals started showing up in their side-by-sides and their old pick-em-up trucks, there was a little bit of chagrin. Some of them came up and were very friendly, but I could see and hear a little bit of grumbling from some of them, but most of them were very, very friendly. And it worked out really good because me and my posse here, my new posse, we ended up having this lock on the rock where I could get my shot. My field of vision could be unobstructed and save my Washington, D.C. friend who hails originally from Boston. This is what we were joking about. Save for him accidentally stepping into frame to give us a little Boston butt on frame, on camera. It went very, very smoothly. But we had a great time. And this is something I want to talk about. And I've talked about it in so many episodes before. This is what's special to me about the backwoods. It's the kind of people you meet out there on the trails. It's the kind of people you meet out there chasing the same adventures as you. The same kind of people that are out there for a lot of us looking for ourselves. You know, you meet kindred spirits. You connect with people. And that to me is what makes this world better and go round is good connections with good people. We had a couple of hours before it really started to set in, right? We talked about all kinds of things. They were eager to learn about many things, Arkansas. It was a super good time. It made the day definitely better, definitely more special. I'm glad that I got locked in with those guys. And we had an addition that came in to make like a seventh to the group, and she was from Havana, Cuba. Not really. Havana, Arkansas. We're weird in Arkansas. We have Havana. We have Paris. You know, we've got a lot of those places that exist in other parts of the world. I mean, just across the line in Oklahoma, we have Panama. You know, trust me, it's nothing like Panama in Central America. But name a lot of places. Of course, up there in Missouri, I know Rob C. will know this. There's Cuba, Missouri. And Josh, my Roton night hiker, you guys know all about Cuba. Oh, and Mexico, too. Right outside of St. Louis, isn't there? Mexico? Anyway, I digress. So, we had a friend from Havana, local, but she was a very kindred spirit like us. She fit right in, and she slid right in with our group, and the rest of them kind of stayed back off the bluff, and they found a big opening to look up at the sky. I was far more focused on the effects of the eclipse on the environment around me. Of course, I'm going to look at the disc when we go totality. Of course I am. Okay, but I'm more focused on experiencing this total experience. I don't just want to see the sun go dark. I want to see my world go dark, right? I want to see the things I've been reading about. I want to hear and feel the things I've been reading about. So out there, exposed on that bluff face was the perfect place for me to be. And guys, boy, did it ever pan out. boy, did it ever pan out. And that's what we're going to talk about now, is what this was like for me. First-hand experience. It's a fresh memory. And in a way, I almost feel like that could work against me because I haven't had time to process it. But the alternative is I really hemmed and hawed about this on my drive back. And I had a little bit longer drive back because traffic did kind of bleed into the roads. Everyone trying to go home somewhere. I had more time to think about this on the way back. But do I want to record this quickly when I haven't processed it? But then I thought about how I was already starting to feel this depression almost, this come down off of what happened up there to the blandness of reality, everyday reality. And I was like, I do not want to process this so far that I forget the way this feels. I think that no matter how late it is, I get in, no matter what, I think we have to record tonight. Even if we don't edit yet, even if we don't drop yet, I think we have to record tonight. And I'm glad that I'm sitting here doing it. I think this was the right call. Because what happened up there is nothing short of the single most incredible experience of my life. You guys know I am prone to exaggeration, and I usually laugh at myself and point it out. I'm not laughing, and I am pointing out this is not an exaggeration. This is one of those moments that will change you somewhere inside. Okay? There may not be words to describe what it does or how it makes you feel exactly or what the long-term effects of it on you are for some time, but this changes you, especially if you're there to really, really experience it. So, basically, everything I read online from really, really good authors who had experienced it in totality and had a great way with words, it happened the way that they said it would. One of the things they said, if you don't see totality, but even 98%, 99%, it's just not the same. It's just not the same. And once you experience totality, it's otherworldly, was words that I heard, and it didn't disappoint. It didn't disappoint. So about 45 minutes before, and we were watching the clock pretty close because I had a real timer set for when I could start my big camera, my Canon. And I got it started, and that was an hour out. And I kind of told everyone, I was like, we have 1 hour, 1 hour to touchdown. And by this time, we had quite a crowd had gathered. We had filled up this tiny little parking lot with UTVs, pickup trucks, and Game and Fish. Well, it wasn't Game and Fish. It was Arkansas Forestry. Several of them showed up because they knew better than anyone. This is probably the best vista in the world to view this from. Further cementing that I made a good decision accidentally stumbling into this. And that's a whole other ballgame. The view alone, I got to go back, guys. It was a neat drive, and the view alone, you could camp up there. It'd be great. Wake up, possibly, to the cloud cover below you in the valley. If none of you have ever experienced that, I have before. Down there in this area, as a matter of fact, off of the Petitjean River, but I was running a route for FedEx at the time, ended up on top of this high peak where this one person who apparently had all the money that, say, Bezos doesn't have, he had the rest, apparently, living on top of this damn mountain over Danville. And I had to deliver up there one day, and I looked down, I get up out of the fog that I've been driving in all morning and realized it was clear skies. The sun was shining bright. And below me was what looked like a sea of clouds throughout all the valleys around me. Just like water in a basin, water in a lake. It's something. Good God, it's something. That could very easily happen if you stayed up on top. If you got there early enough, sunset would be nice. Sunrise would be incredible. It's more east facing than west. But further cemented that this worked out because we've got forestry commission guys, several, at least one, two, one of them had a broken foot, three, and I believe I saw four and five. I'm almost positive I saw two more that hung back with the rest of the crowd that were not the three we interacted with extensively. At least five. I think it was at least five. Plus a pretty darn big group of locals, from what I could tell. And then there's us up here on the front edge. And out of all of us, at about an hour, I let everyone know. I was like, guys, we got about an hour to go. And everyone was really starting to get excited and jacked. At 45 minutes, and this is what I had read online as well, it said at 45 minutes, things will start to kind of noticeably change. Over the next 45 minutes, the atmosphere will begin to change. It will begin to feel cooler. Shadows will grow longer. The birds eventually will stop singing and go to roost. The crickets may start chirping once you hit full totality. You will not hear birds. It'll be dead air other than, say, crickets or frogs if you're down on a lake, possibly, or anywhere near water. And at 45 minutes, people were starting to say, oh man, I should have brought a jacket. It's starting to feel a little chilly. The temperature started to noticeably change. You know, our totality started at roughly 1:48 p.m. Central Standard Time, which is 13:48. But it actually kicked off at 12:30. That's when the first little nibble hit the disc, which was cool as heck just to see that alone. I mean, and it happened. I mean, it's almost like astronomers and scientists know what the hell they're talking about, because they said it's going to happen like pretty much at this moment in your location. You look at it, and there it is, just the little tiniest pinprick nick out of the corner of the disk of the sun. It was intense. It was just crazy, just that little bit. Well, over the next 45 minutes, guys, it did. It began to change slowly. At first, temperature felt a little down. The breeze got a little bit colder. There was a pretty good breeze right there. You know, you're on a prominent portion on the face of the top of a good mountain peak there. The shadows started to change the color of the sky. Now, this was a big one. And the more we got closer to totality, we got into, say, the last 20 minutes, the sky started to change color. We were pointing out to each other, look, the clouds are starting to turn pinkish, almost like it's sunset. Though the sun's directly overhead, there was a very hard to see, but pinkish purplish hue. And we did have cloud cover today. It was high cirrostratus for the most part, which kind of complicated things, but it ended up being okay, and it ended up really great for the time lapse, as a matter of fact. It ended up not really obstructing anyone's view of the eclipse, but you could see those clouds. I mean, actually, I think it added a lot of ambiance. It added a lot of atmosphere to this environment. And as it started to change, it did. We got into that last 20 minutes in. Starts to get darker and darker and darker, and then it starts to happen really fast, and it gets eerie almost. It becomes somewhat otherworldly, and I can assure you, I was there with like, what was it, 7 of my new bestest friends, and maybe 30 to 40 other people further back. Had I been alone anywhere in a wilderness, that could have been downright creepy, because everything you know about reality in that moment changes. 20 minutes ago, it was broad daylight and it's lunchtime, time for a late lunch. It is now going completely black in the middle of the day. The birds have stopped singing. The world around you is changing into like a dreamscape. Okay? It puts a lot of perspective. Me as a cultural anthropologist, right, to get to experience a big cultural human event. No, this is a world event, of course. This is a universal event, of course, in many places. Lots of planets that have moons have eclipses. But for like human cognition, for cognitive thought, for beings on this planet, this is a huge cultural experience. All of these people together witnessing something otherworldly, supernatural feeling even, together. And as a cultural anthropologist, it really, really, to get to experience that now, here today, and put the understanding of what it was like in person with a knowledge of science, okay? And what's really happening up there in the skies, to juxtapose my feelings with intellectual knowledge about what's actually going onto people, say, 5,000 years ago, who had no intellectual knowledge, scientifically speaking, of what was happening in the skies, it suddenly adds so much flavor, so much depth to the mythologies, the folklores, the supernatural stories of cultures of our past. And it makes them so much richer and so much more full to see the ways in which they chose to speak about these things. Like the Choctaw, they have the story of the black squirrel. Who's that guy with a voracious little appetite who snacks on anything he can find all day? And one day he climbed so high on the branches he could really see the sun very closely. And he thought, boy, the sun looks like a great snack. I could snack on that for hours, for days. And so he started to eat the sun and it blacked out the sun. And the Choctaw people knew that they couldn't have him eating the sun because that's what gave life. And so they started to yell at him and make noises and slam things together to run off little black squirrel. And of course he did, and the sun came back, and thus you get the mythology of the Choctaw people of the eclipse. And you look at the Mayans, who believed the sun was eating the moon. It's a lot easier once you've experienced something that touches you inside the way this will, and affects you physically the way that this will, and emotionally and spiritually and mentally. It adds so much depth to our understanding of other cultures and other peoples in those stories. And they just become so much more, again, just richer. I'm at a loss for words on a lot of this. So, the actual experience itself, the moment the totality hit, it happens in a few seconds. For an hour, things slowly change. At 30 minutes, it speeds up. At 15 minutes, you start the snowball and it's rolling downhill like it's really effectively, you're getting colder and colder. It's getting darker and darker. The sky is starting to turn into almost this sepia-toned gloom. Sepia tone is like Old West photos, that brownish yellowish. There's purples, there's oranges in a bead around the entire horizon, and all of this is happening and you can feel it with your five senses. About the only thing you can't do is taste it. Okay? You feel it, you hear it, you see it. It's everything. It is a multi-sensory experience. And it is absolutely breathtaking. But the moment, those last few seconds, that sun, the moon, they come together and it collapses together. And all of a sudden, I'm getting chills. I'm not even playing right now. I'm remembering it. And I'm getting chills remembering it. Okay? When it collapses together, boom. You get that diamond ring effect everyone was talking about, and you see it with your naked eyes. That's the one time through the entire eclipse you can take those glasses off and experience what's happening. It's getting me choked up right now. And I am an emotional dude, y'all know that, but I'm not joking. If you didn't experience it, you don't know. That diamond ring, that is one of the single most beautiful things you may ever see with your physical eyes. Happen in the real tangible world around you, guys. That corona and that diamond ring, and then Bailey's beads. They've been talking about Bailey's beads because of the differences in the shape of the surface of the moon, right? It's got craters, it's got valleys, it's got mountains, and the sun cuts the edges through the edges of those valleys, and you'll get these little flares that are like, they call them Bailey's beads, I guess. But that diamond ring, that diamond, that pinpoint that just explodes off of one of the edges. I saw it. I don't know. I guess it's the same for everyone. To me, I saw it off directionally. It doesn't matter. I don't need to try to orient that. I was looking up in the air. It moved me. I had chills over my entire body and it brought me to tears. True story. And then I tore myself away from looking directly at that to observe the environment around me, and it was like something out of a dream. That's the best I can come up with. It was felt like a dream I had at some point in my life. The atmosphere is so tangibly, visibly different, and it's eerie, but it's beautiful. It is so incredibly beautiful. And I took enough time to hit record on my phone and shoot at the horizon, but I wasn't really thinking about where I was aiming. Justin wasn't in videographer mode. Justin wasn't in podcaster mode. Justin wasn't in YouTuber mode. God forbid Justin should ever be in influencer mode. God, if that ever happens, somebody come beat me. I was just in inhuman mode, hoping that once I hit record and just kind of aimed that way, but just looked with my eyes wherever I wanted to experience it, something good would come out. And I think there was a little bit of good footage came out of that, but that I didn't give a crap, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd hoped like it'd be nice if I could try to capture this, but I was way more experienced on this. You're way more focused on this 4 minutes of experience. That's like 4 minutes out of my lifetime. That's 4 minutes. You want to talk about how precious time is. I may get another shot in another 20 years or so from my understanding if I go chase it. But I knew in that moment, this may be my 4 minutes that I get to experience it this. And that's what I intended to do. And I did. And it moved me. It touched me in ways that I can't explain to you right now. I really don't have the words yet. I don't have the vocabulary for it. Don't have the vernacular. Choose your descriptive word. I don't have it. I don't have it. But what I do have is a feeling in here that I saw something borderline spiritual. You know, that's a physical thing that just happened. Astronomy, science. It can explain it. But those two things, the one thing they can never explain are the intangibles, which is what it does to the inside of a human soul. Whatever is us, whatever it is that we call a soul, whatever that is, that experience will touch it and it will change it. And you will be a different human on the other side of it, like I am right now, sitting here before you, trying to describe it to you. And for any of you that did witness it, hopefully you hear this and it just brings back the great memories. For any of you who didn't, I hope that it prompts you to chase one of these down somewhere in your lifetime, because this is the kind of experience that, you know what, one way to describe it is when it ended, one of the very first thoughts that came to me was, how can any enormous group of human beings ever experience something like this together, collectively, as a society, and not feel like we're complete idiots for the petty crap that we divide ourselves over, that we fight over, that we struggle with, that we blow up worlds for? It's so petty. That moment is a moment of like oneness with everyone and everything. We're all experiencing it together. And it's like, how can you not feel how much bigger this universe is than this tiny, fragile, blue dot that hangs in the void of space? And we're lucky enough to be here. We're lucky enough to live to experience this. But all we can think about is how much we want to hate everyone else around us. Like, it just puts into perspective the tininess, the pettiness of us and our egos. At least for me, it did. It was a really special experience that I think everyone should try to make an attempt to experience for themselves at least once in their lives. And for me, it was even more special because I made a bunch of new friends today, and they literally, truly were the best people for a bunch of strangers. If I was going to sit on the side of that mountain alone and have to watch that alone with just complete strangers, I couldn't have gotten a better group of complete strangers to experience it with. They were really super cool people. We were all, I think, on the same wavelength. We're all on the same page. And it was really, really special. And I learned a lot of new things today about some new people. And yeah, couldn't have gone any better. The time lapse maybe could have. No, you know what? Really? That time lapse came out as good as I could have ever hoped for, given my limitations of finances, equipment, time, and technical skills. Given all of those limitations, just where I'm at in life at this point, it came out as good as I could have ever hoped for. It pales in comparison to things we're going to see over the next few days come out of this event. It pales in comparison. It's nothing compared to what we're going to see, and I can't wait to see those. Am I going to be jealous? You dang right I am. But I'm a practical dude. I knew my limitations, and I prepared to get the best I could. And you know what? Those preparations paid off, and I got the best I could. It was not a flop. It's something that is special enough for me to go back and look at and remember what it was like for a minute. And so in the end, it wasn't a flop. Everything worked out today. The only part of today that I don't like is the fact that it's going to end, to be completely honest. I am at this moment sunburned and throbbing as my head is, dried out, gritty dirt, dust in my teeth as I have. This was like the kind of adventure that has driven me and sets my soul on fire. It was odd. It was quirky. It was spur of the moment in a way. Where are we going? I don't know. I'm about to find out. I found out. I chased it down. I did everything I could to try to put it together at the last minute. And you know what? It worked out in the end. It worked out in the end. And I couldn't ask for better. I really couldn't ask for better than what today turned out to be. It was something I desperately needed, I think. I needed a little victory. We all need a little victory every once in a while. I needed a little victory. And I got one today. And got some new friends to boot. And that makes me very happy. That makes my soul very, very happy. And to you, my new friends, if you're out there listening, I hope you do listen to the podcast. And I'm glad that we got to hang out. It was a pleasure to meet every one of you. Actually, I need to shout you out by name. There was Ron and Jenny from Omaha, Sharon from Havana, Jeremy from Washington, D.C., and Michelle and Jordan from St. Paul, Minnesota. And guys, I had a great time. I hope you did too. And hope you enjoyed our state. Sure is pretty, isn't it? Just liked you guys. Don't move here. Just don't move here. That's what I saw a post on Facebook the other day, and it made me giggle because it was great. It was like directed at we Arkansans, and it was like, guys, remember, we're shooting for, hey, y'all got a nice place, come back and see us, not, hey, move in. We don't want to be so nice that people want to move here. We want to be just nice enough that they might want to come back and say hi. You have to understand, this state is exploding in population, and it's getting a little bit awkward. It's getting a little bit, not enough elbow room. Anyway, guys, I think that's good enough. Had a fairly long trip home. Not really that bad, actually. It went pretty smoothly. I saw a lot of the gridlock, but I used my smarticle particles and everything I know about these back roads, and I stayed off of them. And where I was able to skirt alongside some of the major highways, I saw some pretty good congestion. I didn't run into a lot of it. A lot more traffic on the back roads. The locals know. The locals always know, right? I think that's as good a place as any to leave this episode. We probably came up shy of an hour, but you know what? I said what I wanted to say, and I don't need to beat this horse. I think this is good enough. I am recording today, the day of the event. I am still high from it. I am very sunburned, and I'm still burning. It'll get redder by tomorrow. And it was worth every second of everything that it took to make today happen. And yeah, I hope you guys got to experience it too. Let's call it an episode with that. You guys like, subscribe, share, all those things. Rate, review. Those are the important ones. If you want to get in touch with me, and please do, mywaywardstory@gmail.com. Or you can go to waywardstories.com if you want to connect with me on any of the social medias or watch more YouTube videos, not just this. Actually, my time lapse is right over there on YouTube. Right now, you can already go see it. And you can judge for yourself if it came out worth a dang or not. Anything else is just best to go to waywardstories.com. Until next time, guys, I hope you guys find some adventures to go get into, to keep you busy. And like I always say, it seems all the more potent and prescient to me tonight is y'all be good to each other.